The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of OneClick Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff. For their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells, you can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And this is going to be the first of one of a handful of solo episodes I do this summer. You know, it's summertime, people are on vacation, and a lot going on, and I don't know, I thought it'd be fun to spice up a little bit, bring you a handful of solo episodes. These will be a little shorter, a little punchier, so you don't have to listen to me straight for 45 minutes in a row. I try not to subject anyone to that. But thoughts on a bunch of different things. And today, talking about the E-Myth Revisit. You've all heard that phrase, you want to work on your business instead of in your business. That comes, I believe, from the book, The E-Myth Revisited. It's kind of a pretty common saying. I'm sure you've heard it before. Today on the show, I want to make the case for why there's a time and a place to revert, to go back to work in your business, in the trenches, talking with customers, and really in the nitty-gritty, why I think this is a good idea. So we're going to be diving into that today. Do you want to have you stick around? We're also doing a mini conversation with Alan Fish from Moonshot Brands at the end of this episode, brought to you by A2X Accounting. So we'll be talking about the state of e-commerce, M&A, aggregators, getting your financials in order for a sale, and a bunch more stuff. So stick around for that after today's episode for a conversation. So why, you know, this sounds, I got to be honest, this is a little bit of a cheeky title, a little bit clickbaity. I'll use that term because it's probably accurate. I don't think as an owner, you want to be doing this all the time, right? You can't build a scalable business. You can't build a meaningful business if you're in the trenches nonstop. But I think it's really valuable to dive back in on occasion for a number of reasons we'll talk about today. For me, I've been doing that for the last 2 to 3 weeks. We have an annual sabbatical for all of our full-time stateside team members. I'll talk about that a little bit after I chat through some of my thoughts on diving back into the business. And so Patrick, our community manager, has been out for the last 2-3 weeks, and yeah, I've been filling in for him. And so that's where this is coming from. I've been doing a lot of the stuff he normally does. He does a phenomenal job taking care of the community, moderating it, bringing new members in, all that kind of stuff. So that's where this episode comes from. So I got 7 reasons for you today why you should consider diving back in on a not infrequent basis into the work that your team is doing. And the first one is, one, you realize how much work it is and you build up some empathy for your team. And man, you are stoked to have them back when they come back. I think as leaders of our organizations, it's very easy to shoot off emails to our team and say, hey, we should be doing this. Or hey, why aren't we doing this? Or let's get going on this. And it's easy to send those off. And over time, just like that garage of yours piles up with stuff that you don't need, before long, you have your team just doing all of these things that are of varying degrees of importance. Almost certainly none of them are, or the majority of them aren't the most important thing. And we forget that they are doing those because a lot of times, at least good team members aren't going to whine about all the stuff that they have to do. And oftentimes, we're probably not good enough at asking them, hey, how much is on your plate? What's your workload? How can I help you prioritize? Maybe you are. I'm probably not as good at that as I should be. And so the first one is you realize how much stuff your team is doing, and it gives you some empathy for their workload and can help you prioritize, as we'll talk about here in a minute. And you're really excited to have them back. Like, we all take for granted things that we don't, that you have for a while, whether that's a team member, whether that's Uber, whether that's your spouse, whatever it is, the things that you have for a while that just become part of your life, you take for granted. So not having them in your life or your business for a while, it makes you really appreciate them. So that's the first one. realize how much work it is and giving you a sense of the workload and some empathy for your team. Second one is you quickly realize where things are out of alignment with your priorities. So diving in, you know, we have at e-commerce, so kind of an onboarding process that worked for a long time. I think it still works really well. But diving in, I quickly realized, man, this onboarding process is very high touch. It really brings people in. Well, it introduces them to a lot of members, but there's also a lot of potentially unnecessarily friction points that we could streamline to make it, to hopefully keep most of the personal aspect, but be able to minimize back and forth, get people in more quickly. That's just one example. There's going to be millions more in your business, and they're always there, but you get to dive in and you really get to see where things aren't necessarily in line with your priorities as an owner in terms of your values or how things are working. Things also change. Maybe you gave direction to your team about something, or you had a goal that they were chasing. You haven't revisited that, but a lot of the operations for the way your business is running is still with that kind of that old direction in mind. You're going somewhere new. So you get a really good sense very quickly of what things you want to change, improvements you want to make, priorities that maybe are no longer priorities. And that's harder to do when you're, you know, kind of higher up in the organization and you're not seeing the day-to-day. So that's number two. You realize where things are kind of out of alignment with your priorities, potentially even have a lot of room for improvement, or where your goals have changed and you want to kind of refocus. Number three, it's a great chance to connect deeply with your customers, your members, and understand and be reminded about what's important to them or the experience that they have. So one thing I went through, I mean, all of us have done this at some point, we probably have a good sense, but it's easy to forget when you're not talking with your customers, maybe day to day. Had an experience recently where I was chatting with a member and an ECF member, they just joined or were getting ready to join. And so I watched them go through the onboarding process and it was so embarrassing. It was so bad because there was a lot of stuff that we had not looked at, revisited, we built it up and kind of forgot about it in terms of just difficulties kind of coming on board, all the email flows, the experience, the user experience when people came in, what was important to them when they first joined the community, all these things that we thought about once a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, put in place and forgot about that had kind of broken. And this kind of ties into number two. But anyway, chatting with that member, understanding what was important to them coming into the community, watching their experience in real time, talking through them for half an hour was one of the most valuable things I did all year. And it resulted in us, me understanding and being reminded about what's important to our members in our community. And secondly, making some massive changes to our onboarding to address some of the UX problems. So you get a chance to really connect more deeply, more frequently with customers and understand what's important, be reminded about that because it's easy to forget. Number four, you get to connect with team members you may not get to stay in as close a touch with. So I have a pretty small team, so this isn't as big of an issue. But if it's an issue for me with a small team, it's definitely going to be an issue if you have, you know, 20, 30, 40 people or more in your organization. As the leader, you probably have a group of people you connect the most with, maybe a leadership team, maybe your managers, and you're not chatting with everyone. You can't chat with everyone in your organization every week. You wouldn't be able to get anything done. But I think it is important to, even if it's an infrequent basis, connect with your team so they know that you appreciate them, you value them, you can get input from them on what is going on with the business, keep your relationship and your rapport strong. It's important. And so I've had a chance over the last couple of weeks to connect with one of our team members that does a lot of the kind of behind the scenes work on the onboarding and with customer support, and our developer, connect with them and chat with them about things in a way that I haven't talked to them meaningfully in 3 to 6 months or more. And it's been super valuable. So great chance to reconnect with people you wouldn't otherwise if you're diving in kind of the day to day. So that's number four. Number five, you get a real good chance to understand where your team is using their time suboptimally. And again, this kind of goes back to number one, you realize how much work it is, and also ties into the priorities that you are setting for your team. There's things that I'm doing that I'm thinking, man, this is not a great use of my team's time. We should revisit this. It's either in terms of things that we can automate in the business, in terms of things that we should just absolutely get rid of or reconsider. But when somebody else is doing the grunt work and it magically happens, and I put magically in quotes, because it's not magically happening, you just don't have to do it. It's much easier to say, hey, it's not a big deal. Someone else is taking care of this. When your team is doing it, when you're doing it and you are manually doing something that's taking 20, 30 minutes a day, all of a sudden you think, why are we should not be doing it like this? Let's invest the time and resources to automate it or get rid of it, because man, I don't want to do it this way. I don't want my team who's, you know, has valuable time doing it that way. It will open up them up to do so many other things. So you get a real quick idea, a very clear idea quickly about where your team's time is being used suboptimally. And again, in ways that they may not bring to you proactively for, you know, because again, good team members, maybe they do that, but they also may not want to come across as complaining or saying they don't want to do the work. So that's number five. And then finally, the last one, number six, is it helps you become more productive. Man, when you are taking on the job of someone else, and also, you know, the rest of your company is not going to stop running. The rest of the, you know, your inbox is not going to magically get less crowded. You have to do more in less time. And like most of us, we adapt. And so you realize, I feel like I'm a pretty efficient person, but man, I've been so, because I've had to be so much more efficient the last 2 to 3 weeks to make sure I get everything done that, you know, for covering for Patrick, and also making sure that all the stuff I'm trying to do doesn't fall through the cracks. So it helps you really focus, get productive, helps you, you know, again, kind of ruthlessly prioritize the things that aren't as important, kind of drop away. And you feel, man, when your team comes back in, or when you step away from that in the trenches role for that temporary period, man, you feel like, oh my goodness, what was I doing with all this free time before? It's this amazing feeling. And you can then use that freedom and that freed up time either for additional business growth or for, you know, maybe even something completely outside the business. It's like this weird bracketing hack that you get, that you become more productive because you have to. And then you feel like you've been given this gift of extra time when you kind of step away from the position. So anyway, those are the six reasons. Strongly recommend you carve out at a bare minimum, maybe a week to do this once a year. You don't have to do it forever. I'm not advocating, you know, spending a quarter of a year doing this, but even a couple of days, ideally, but maybe a week diving in so you can get a sense of the full scope of someone's role, especially the critical roles in your business. I think it makes a ton of sense as a leader. I mean, even good CEOs, I think, of, you know, billion-dollar companies, they dive into these positions and you know, at a minimum, you know, kind of try to see all of the parts of their organization from the top all the way down to the very, you know, very kind of entry-level roles. And it's because it's a big deal. So if you can, try to carve out at least a week, ideally, maybe even a little more per year to do it. So circling back a little bit, I mentioned at the top, getting ready to take a month off long sabbatical. And that's something that we offer to all of our full-time kind of stateside members. And why do we do that? This is our third year doing it. My thought process is, and I've talked about it a little bit before, one is a chance to recharge, for team members to recharge. So amazing how much more excited you can be for your role when you've had a meaningful amount of time to recharge. It's also, if you look at over the history of great creators and artists and musicians and just creative people in general, and so much of what we're doing today requires creativity, it's how you fuel that creativity. And all great creators and they've had this kind of these periods of a lot of work and deep rest, a lot of work and then deep rest. And that's in the long term, I think what really is most productive. So we do it because of that. We do it because it's one of my values. Like one of our business values is deeper meaning. And I think I love having a chance to get out, spend time with friends and family, go on big adventures, work on more involved self, you know, personal development projects, things like that. So if I'm doing that, I want my team to be able to do that. And then finally, selfishly, I want to make it impossible for my team to leave. I want to hire great people. If they ever get tempted to look somewhere else, say, man, who else is going to offer a month off every year to be able to go do stuff? I can't leave. That's too good. I can't leave. And so selfishly, I want to use it as something to retain really great people. So for me, I'm getting ready to go on sabbatical here for about 3 or 4 weeks for end of July, kind of most of August. And I've tried the last couple of summers, I've tried to do this with varying degrees of success. I think we maybe did a podcast on it 2 years ago. The first time completely failed. It was all queued up to go and then had the Overlander project pop up that was a project that involved Drew Sinaki and Michael Epstein, a couple of people I really enjoy, involved some old friends from college that had built up a really cool brand in a space I enjoy. Anyway, so a great opportunity popped up, and I kind of dove into that headfirst. Sabbatical disappeared. Last year, had kind of a ECF Capital deal that kind of took up a lot of that time because there were some issues with that came up for closing that. So hoping to not have anything blow up at the last minute here or jump on me that will prevent me from actually having a, you know, a good solid time to go do that. And so my goals for this are, you know, some of the standard ones you'd imagine. Spend a lot of time with family, especially friends, work on some, you know, play a lot of music, do some van work, try to do some cooking, get outside, go on some adventures, some trips, recharge. But it's not all about, you know, you think sometimes, I think people think like you can't do any business. And I'm not planning on doing, one of my rules is I don't want to do any day-to-day kind of stuff for the business, but I really want to carve out some time to be able to think deeply about parts of the business going forward, that vision, what I want to change, what's important, taking the time and space to kind of think higher level about, and I know I'm saying this after I just told you to dive back into the weeds in your business, but carve out that time to think deeply about some of the important but not urgent things, that you know, that fourth quadrant that's hard to carve out time to really spend on, and space especially. So thinking about those kind of things. And also think on, you know, work on parts of the business I normally would not to, like maybe that I'm really excited about, but that I don't normally have the time or can justify. One example, there's this software tool called Rome Research. And it's this tool for taking highly linked, highly cross-categorized notes for everything from what you're reading to journaling to your to-do lists. And I have lived my life, I'm a big list guy, but I've lived my life in probably a couple dozen different Word documents with bulleted lists over the last 2 or 3 years. And it works okay, but it's starting to break down. And this tool has caught my attention, imagination. And I'm like, I want to spend like, you know, 8 to 12 to 14 hours really diving deep and learning how to use this. Not something I'm going to be able to do on a regular work day when I have other stuff coming up. So making space for things like that as well. So very excited for it. So if I'm not as active in the forums, on email, or I don't get back to you on something over the last, you know, next couple of weeks, please forgive me. I'll do a post sabbatical episode as well and report how it went, any insights and recommendations for it. So looking forward to that. Yeah, hope you enjoyed this. Again, carve out a week to dive back into some of those key roles in your business, especially if they're customer facing. I think it makes a ton of sense. And also please make sure to stick around with my discussion with Alan from Moonshot Brands here, right at the end of the funky music brought to you by A2X. The fact that you've stuck around through that much e-commerce nerding out and geekery tells me you just might be a good fit for the e-commerce fuel community. It's the largest group of 7- and 8-figure store owners on the planet, and it's a packed, active discussion board, multiple live events throughout the year, and so much more. So if that kind of sounds interesting, you should check it out, learn more, and consider applying for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Also, big thanks to One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your average order value by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also A2X, saving you hours of wasted time and frustration by making e-commerce reconciliation easy. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/A2X. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday. Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside, and you obviously love e-commerce, you're interested in that, and so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe, and our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log into our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active forum with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members, you know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and just, and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member-only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. Hey, it's Andrew here again. And like I promised at the top, we've got a little bonus episode here brought to you by A2X Accounting with Alan Fish from Moonshot Brands. He's the co-founder and co-CEO and just going to have a little discussion. He does a lot of investing in e-commerce companies, sees the what's going on in the markets, and we're going to be chatting about what's happening right now, some of the things he looks for, some of the things that blow up deals, and kind of how A2X plays into his process and tech stack, both before and after acquisitions. It's kind of interesting. So, Alan, thanks for coming on for this. We don't do this a whole lot, but it's kind of a fun little experimental thing we're doing, and excited to talk with you.
Yeah, Andrew, great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Moonshot Brands, can you give folks just a quick summary of what you do? And I think maybe most interesting to focus on is you mentioned you're very data driven. A lot of investment firms and firms that buy e-commerce companies are they like industries, or maybe they're focused on Amazon, but you kind of have a slightly different approach.
Yeah, Andrew, definitely. You know, so we're Moonshot Brands. We operate, acquire, and grow Amazon and Shopify brands and scale them globally on our platform. You know, basically this involves using our own proprietary technology and the greatest minds in growth and operations, you know, to really both choose the best companies with a great trajectory in the future, and then also be able to optimize companies using the best, you know, technology and growth teams, et cetera, and make sure that we can help them be omnichannel in a click of a button as we buy companies. And we're very actively buying companies all across North America and Europe and have deep expertise moving them to international markets. I mean, I'd like to add just a bit that, you know, we have, you know, a dozen brands and we're going to buy about, you know, up to 30 more brands this year. We've raised about $200 million in funding. And, you know, our omnichannel platform really helps brands expand and go global with the click of a button.
Yeah. And on the, you know, seems like the last 3, 4, 5 years has had a number of people come into that space, raise a lot of money, go out and buy e-commerce companies. Some of those seem to be kind of having a rough go of it at the moment in terms of just maybe realizing it's harder than they thought, been paying up for businesses that maybe they shouldn't have. It's just been, seems like the kind of the narrative, or, you know, at least the narrative, and if not the reality, has changed for some of those folks in the last 6 months. What are your thoughts on that? Like, I mean, you're right in the middle of it and running one of those investment companies. Any thoughts on that? Is it been overblown? Are you seeing a lot of cracks in other companies, or finding it harder to kind of run that business model kind of circa? We're recording this in July 2022.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, thanks for asking that. I think it's a very, very relevant question. You know, we very much believe in the thesis and, you know, think they're has never been a time with sort of better operating e-commerce companies out there. And, you know, we've looked at about $2.5 billion worth of deals a month. And, you know, we're seeing other aggregators who are pausing acquisitions and laying off workers. And I think that's not at all, you know, what we want to do. I think we have a different approach. And, you know, frankly, we recently raised capital and we're in the market, you know, buying companies. And, you know, we leverage our own technology to drive, you know, unique insight and make the companies operate more efficiently. We have our platform and our experience building an omnichannel experience where we very quickly can take companies we buy to multiple marketplaces internationally, track and analyze the data, and have, you know, insight towards growth and optimizing operations. And, you know, like anyone else in this cycle, we've been pretty disciplined, you know, investing in these cycles, but we think we'll do more deals than we'd ever done, you know, in the past. But the truth is, what actually has happened is, you know, COVID has definitely had an impact and there was a huge bump, you know, in e-commerce revenues, you know, throughout COVID. And like you said, $12 billion was raised and this caused, you know, purchase prices to rise significantly. and a lot of times not really stick to the fundamentals. And I would say what we've seen with the Federal Reserve raising interest rates, with lenders being, you know, aggressive, but, you know, sort of moving forward, you know, moving the industry forward, you know, we see the opportunity to get more back to our roots as, you know, a disciplined buyer. So I would say, you know, during peak COVID, you saw companies going from multiples of like 5x profit, et cetera. Today, you're much more looking in the, call it 1.5x to 3.5x. And there's a whole bunch of data and actual performance and margins and outcomes that relate to it. So, it, you know, it's really like the broader economy going back to the fundamentals and, you know, stepping away from growth at all costs.
So you're saying that the, because again, about 5x, what range of business are you talking about here? Because a lot of times the multiples will vary quite a bit based on the size of the business and the earnings.
Yeah, definitely. You know, larger businesses, like you said, usually the multiples are higher. I mean, we look at companies, like I said earlier to you, ranging from, you know, 200,000 in profit to, you know, up to $10 million of profit, or really more in the revenue range, you know, between, let's say, 2 to 30, sometimes even 40 million.
Got it. And so you're saying those, is it those, you know, 1 to 1.5 to seems really low on my side, maybe 3x was maybe something.
That's right. Million. That would be more for businesses that are struggling, that you said, that, you know, that end of the market. But I think what you saw, you know, when, you know, interest rates were at all-time lows, and like you said, this debt and equity of, you know, $12 billion or more dollars just plowed into the space. And then there was also record COVID, you know, revenues. The prices sort of really, really were inflated, not based on the fundamentals, because there wasn't, usually it's based on growth. And many of those companies could not keep up with their growth the following year in the reality of the new market where, you know, consumer spending is tighter, interest rates are higher, and there's just more a cautious outlook. But I mean, we ourselves have always been, you know, stuck to the fundamentals, and we were an active buyer then, and I would say we're even a more active buyer now. And, you know, really we believe that, you know, an exit for a seller can really create a life-changing outcome and sort of set them off on a path. You know, a lot of freedom is, you know, brought to them through entrepreneurship and these great outcomes. And, you know, companies like us, which have a larger platform to operate in the best of times and the worst of times, really have become, you know, sort of an asset in the market and create liquidity in a market that had more liquidity, I would say, last year than this year. And many of the big buyers in our space, like you said, have had hiccups and have slowed down, as opposed to us, who've been growing, buying great assets, you know, and really creating growth, value, and optimizing operations and opportunities.
Yeah. What do you guys look for when you're buying? What are some of the biggest things that are big red flags for you and that sellers can prepare for, particularly on the financial side, perhaps with kind of the A2X context, but also in general?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I've actually went through, you know, an acquisition of multiple companies that I've run and started and built up. And in hindsight, probably some of the biggest issues that I've seen and, you know, I would share is to a seller is like, you know, make sure you clean up your financials. You know, many companies we review are a bit of a mess, to be honest. There's like cash accounting issues. There's add backs that don't make sense. We have to reconstruct, you know, accounting from revenue to cash-based accounting, you know, and a great way to eliminate this. And really in the first companies we bought, we worked with an expert, you know, who used e-commerce automation tools that ATX built. That's really a way to be buttoned up and prepare, you know, to be ready to sell and really project yourself in the best light. You know, after that, you build an organized buttoned up data room. So all the data is right there and you don't have to go looking for anything like that. It's all presented on a silver platter. And then, you know, buyers like us can really work, you know, very quickly in 30 to 45 days and do due diligence, analyze the data and really make a decision and do an acquisition in that period. And like realistically, you know, if someone sends us buttoned up data and uses the right accounting software, we can make an offer in 24 hours and we can have a completed deal and an exit in 30 to 45 days.
Yeah. When it's, this is hard to say, but when you do get into books and they're just an absolute disaster, how much of the time do you just look at it and say, it's not worth it? And how much of the time do you say, I guess it depends on how much badly you want the business too, right? But how often do you go through and when you see just an unmitigated disaster on the financial side, do you forge ahead anyway, despite the fact that you're going to have to rebuild P&Ls from, you know, from credit card statements and bank statements, which can be it's probably not everyone's favorite use of time.
You know what? I would say it's a major issue. And even though we have the bandwidth to do that, you know, I might be able to do three deals in the time I would do a single deal like that. And it seems like, you know, if there's great technology out there that you can just be using day to day, like A2X, and really get that done, you know, you might as well be using it. And I mean, you know, look, we have various programs at our company. We acquire more like plain vanilla companies that are operating well and have product market fit. And like I said, doing, you know, 400,000 profit or over, growing at like 15% a year. But we also have a program where we buy, you know, turnaround companies where they're not doing well, but our data or analytics has identified an opportunity that we can execute on that improve these brands. And in those cases, you know, there's a lot more flexibility for us to really dive into numbers that are done terribly and really figure them out and normalize them. But, you know, in a general deal, a plain vanilla deal, I mean, your company should have strong financials and you should show them in the best light by both using the right software and creating a really buttoned up data room, which is pretty easy today, you know, with things like Dropbox as well, et cetera.
Yeah. And do you guys use A2X for the companies you actually buy on the back end once you buy them, bring them in-house and you're operating them?
Yeah, that's right. We've definitely used A2X. Like I personally am not, you know, the controller or in charge of, you know, our accounting, but definitely we bought companies and continued using A2X's products. And they're great. Like they're super easy. They're very streamlined. And they help make your numbers and your financials far cleaner.
Great. Well, Alan, if people are, you know, we talked about it just a little bit at the top, but if people want to find out more about you and Moonshot, where can they find you and who is a good fit for who you look to buy and invest in?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we're looking for e-commerce companies that are on marketplaces and are on Shopify. They have $400,000 of profit or more. So really ranging from probably $1.5 million to up to $40 million of sales. We're industry agnostic, but the product should be private label. So having their own products. And we're easy to reach. We're very active in the market and we're going to have a record year of acquisitions. And, you know, feel free to reach out to our head of M&A, who's Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, at Moonshot, M-O-O-N-S-H-O-T, Brands, B-R-A-N-D-S. .com. So that's Brandon at moonshotbrands.com. And you can also just go to our website, which is moonshotbrands.com, and there's an easy application on there just to fill out a few things. And then we'll get back to you immediately.
Great. Well, Alan, thank you, sir. Really appreciate it. And like we talked about, if you are hoping to be able to set yourself up for a pretty nice, clean, easy transition sale in the future, or if you just want to take the absolute headache and nightmare out of all your accounting stuff in terms of matching up Amazon sales and doing, you know, matching them up on an accrual basis properly, in addition to a number of other things, A2X Accounting, it's great software, a2xaccounting.com. Make sure to check them out there. Alan, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate it. It was good talking to you.
Great talking to you, Andrew. Cheers.